You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Spectrum Business works with small businesses nationwide, so we know that running your own business means doing it all. Marketing, sales, inventory, customer service, and more. Spectrum One for Business helps you keep it all connected for just $49.99 a month. Get fast, reliable internet, advanced Wi-Fi with Security Shield, and a free mobile line for one low price. Stay connected and do it all with Spectrum One for Business. Only $49.99 a month. Go to spectrum.com/business to learn more. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis.
That's the problem with being Indian. We get fat. We're born skinny. That's the real problem. We're born skinny. We're naturally a skinny race of people. And we're born skinny and we stay skinny. We don't have to work hard to be skinny. We could be skinny and eat whatever we want and stay skinny. And then we never go to the gym because we're skinny. We don't need to. And our parents don't encourage you to go to the gym. You're like, Dad, I'm going to go to the gym. What's in the gym? They have studies in the gym? No, you're not going to the gym. You stay home and do your studies. And because you never tone up, you stay this like really smushy kind of skinny, you know? And you eat whatever you want your entire life. And then at 30, your Indian genes kick in and go, okay, party's over.
And then you just that was back. A clip from comedian Russell Peters' new stand-up special, Russell Peters, Deported, which is now available on Amazon Prime Video. In the special, recorded in front of a sold-out audience in Mumbai's NSCI Stadium, Peters hilariously explores his life as a middle-aged man dealing with health issues, relationships, and fatherhood. And today, Russell joins me on the show to talk about all of that, as well as what it's like performing in India, whether he'd consider doing a Bollywood movie, and why growing up in Toronto, he was actually exposed to black culture more than his own Indian heritage. He recalls getting some early mentorship from the late George Carlin, why he may have been the first comedian to hit it big on YouTube, and how he still maintains a sense of intimacy with his audience, even when he's performing in stadiums before tens of thousands of people. Plus, the pitfalls of ethnic jokes, the best Indian food, and a little parenting advice from this father of two. Coming up with comedian Russell Peters in just a moment. Russell Peters is a stand-up comedian, actor, and producer who plays to sold-out crowds around the world. He became the first comedian to get a Netflix stand-up special, was number 3 on Forbes' list of the world's highest-paid comedians, and I'm sure he loves it when people put that out there to the whole world. And he was recently named as one of Rolling Stone's 50 Best Comics of All Time. Along the way, he also won a Peabody Award and an Emmy for producing Hip Hop Evolution. Now Russell Peters is out with a brand new hour-long stand-up special available on Amazon Prime. It's called Russell Peters, Deported. Russell, welcome.
Hey, thanks. I was impressed with that intro, and I was like, oh, who is this guy? And I realized it's me. I go, oh, that sounds awfully like that sounds like a lie.
Does it bug you that it's now out there that you're one of the highest paid comedians that, like, random strangers know how much money you're making?
I was. I'm not anymore. Yeah. I mean, those are old numbers.
Oh, really?
It's funny because people be like, wow, $25 million? You have $25 million? I don't have $25 million. I grossed $25 million.
Right.
People don't understand how it works. If you say, somebody goes, here's $10 million in this business, you as an artist will walk away maybe with $2.5 million.
Well, I mean, yeah, you got all those costs. I'm assuming you got a manager and
you
an agent.
You got your manager, your agent, lawyers, the government.
Yeah, the government in California,
you're done, $2.5 million.
Shit. Well, you shot this special in Mumbai, and I'm sure it's not your first time there because you got a great reception from the audience.
Yeah, I've been Indian for about 50 years now, so. I've been Indian for 50 years. But, I mean, I was born in Canada, but, you know.
Yeah, do you perform over there a lot?
I have done over the past, 13 or 14 years. Yeah. I started going there and doing it, and it's been great. I mean, they've always, I wasn't sure I was ever going to go there.
Oh, really?
I was like, I don't know. I think maybe they're going to be offended. And they're like, nope. They're like, nope, we love it. Give us more. I'm like, I'm into it. Thanks.
They don't treat Indian Americans differently than they treat Native Indians?
They call us NRIs.
NRIs?
Non-resident Indians.
Now, I'm curious. Do Indians have a distinct style of comedy that's different from Americans? What is the Indian sense of humor like?
Well, I'm the first guy to bring it to them, to show them what stand-up was.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, this is my 31st year of doing stand-up. Wow. So it didn't exist there.
Huh.
And I think that's why I got so popular in a lot of the places around the world, because I introduced a lot of countries to stand. I obviously wasn't trying to do that. I wasn't like, here's what you need to see. It just happened to show up at the time where the internet was starting to catch on, and all these countries had discovered me first.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting because I guess your first big break was like 2004. And I don't know, is it fair to say that you were one of the first YouTube celebrities, or at least the first YouTube comedian, right?
I was definitely the first YouTube sensation.
Really?
And that was 2005. They didn't start until 2005, but the tsunami wave started in mid to late 2004. And then it swelled to what was to YouTube in 2005.
Wow. And I read somewhere that I guess people would load different clips from your show on YouTube where you tell jokes about different ethnicities. It's like they kind of micro-targeted all these different fan bases for you.
Yeah, and it wasn't like, you know, again, none of this was like done, you know, wittingly.
Yeah.
It was done completely unwittingly.
Yeah.
I had no clue.
You didn't realize it was going on.
I didn't realize what was going on. And I thought it was being sent around as, look what this guy said about you. Let's get him. That's the way my brain works at all times. Like, they're out to get you.
Yeah. I mean, do you ever get ethnic groups that get pissed off or offended when you do impersonations of them?
I think now you're probably going to get it more than you were before.
Right. It's just
because of the
hypersensitivity
and everything. Yeah. It's a weird time. And, you know, people are mad at me on. I've had people hit me up about this special saying, because my son's mother is half Mexican, half Honduran.
Uh-huh.
And on the special, I just said that she was Mexican. Because I'm in India. You know how difficult it is to explain, like, Mexican and Honduran? I can say Mexican, they know what that is. I say Honduran, they don't know what that is.
Right.
I have to be like, oh, it's in Central America. It's between Nicaragua and Guatemala and El Salvador. It's right there. You know, but I don't have time. So for the sake of comedic purposes, I just went with one half of her half.
Yeah.
And, you know, I made the joke that way. And because she was Miss Honduras in Miss Universe, the Honduran community was mad. Hey, he's calling Mexican. And I'm like, but she is half Mexican. And then the Mexicans are like, what do you mean? What do you mean? So your child's Mexican? So that I'm like, you're missing the point of what I'm doing here.
Yeah.
Like, go watch all my specials and you'll see that I have nothing against anybody. And my kid's half Mexican. What do you mean? I'm not here to, I'm going to. It doesn't make sense what people are doing nowadays.
Yeah, I mean, people in Central America and Mexico get very pissed off if you say that they're from the wrong country.
No, I know, and it's like, it's not even that for me. It's more like, are you missing the point here?
Yeah.
The point is the joke.
Yeah.
That's all I was trying to get to.
Yeah.
It's all about the joke for me. It has nothing to do with anything. There's no deeper meaning to anything I say.
Yeah. And I mean, to Donald Trump, everyone's a Mexican. So
yeah, I'm a Mexican and I'm Indian.
Yeah, exactly. Are there other taboos that you maybe shy away from or anything that you don't feel comfortable saying these days?
I don't talk about politics.
Really?
I don't, because I don't want to pretend I know about it. Huh. I know.
It's rare for a celebrity to do that. That's impressive.
Well, for me, because I'm also Canadian, so it doesn't really matter. I talk about it in my act right now because I said, look, I'm Canadian. I can't even vote in your country anyway. So you could elect a giraffe and I'd be good with it. I'm like, there he is, President Giraffe. I don't care because it's not like, I mean, I can't complain about something if I can't be part of the solution.
Do comedians in Canada talk much politics? Is there political humor in Canada?
There is. You know, it's not just an American thing. Yeah. It's yes, of course they do, but again, you know, it's everywhere else in the world's localized to whatever they're doing. But I mean, in all fairness, the whole world is laughing at America right now.
Yeah. And not in a good way.
Not in a good way.
Yeah. Now, so your parents are Indian, but you were born and raised in Canada, and now you live in L.A.
Right.
Do you feel like you have a particular attachment to any of those three?
I don't know. I kind of feel like a world citizen, you know?
Uh-huh.
Because wherever I go in the world, I feel like I fit in. I'm like,
yeah.
I'm in Singapore. This is good. I like this. Oh, I'm in India. Oh, this is good. I like this.
Yeah.
Oh, that's beautiful. England. You know, wherever I go, I'm always like, yeah, this is fine with me. I feel good everywhere. Europe, you know, is always good to me, but I don't feel like I'm part of the fray there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Do you play a lot of Europe? Germany?
On the last tour, we did Germany. We did Slovenia, Lithuania, all the Anias, Croatia. Like places I was like, what?
By the way.
And it was sold out.
But weird aside here, you know, I think that the audience will know what I'm talking about when I say, if I just close my eyes, I cannot distinguish you from Seth Rogen. You two have the exact same voice.
Do we sound the same?
Has anyone said that?
No, I've
never
heard
that. Is that a Canadian accent?
Well, we are both Canadian.
Canadian accent or what?
Only I don't have the
All right, yeah. I like that. You kind of almost started to go into a like 80s Bill Cosby there.
Yeah, yeah. 80s Bill Cosby, watch your beverage.
Yeah, exactly. I had someone who told me once that they were on the set of The Cosby Show. And at one point, they took a long break around 2 o'clock. And he said, what's the deal with, like, this long break after lunch? And he said, that's the hour when Bill Cosby teaches Asian models comedy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
I knew a guy that wrote on that show. I don't.
Really?
I wonder if I haven't seen him in years, but I'd love to ask him questions now.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Knowing what we know now.
God, yeah. So when did you first get into comedy?
I started doing it in 89.
Really?
But I was always a fan of comedy.
Yeah? Like, who were the people that you looked up to?
George Carlin, Steve Martin, Don Rickles, Cheech and Chong, Eddie Murphy.
Yeah, that's a good list.
That's a pretty solid list.
I remember,
Rickles. You know, I was thinking about it the other day, and I realized my first introduction to comedy was listening to it on the radio.
Oh, yeah?
Really? Sunday Night Funnies.
Oh, yeah? Like, would they have a lot of American comics on there?
Yeah, well, who else are you going to listen to?
Right. Canada.
I'm talking the
Canada
70s.
Canada has a rich history of comedy.
We do, but they would all move to America, and we wouldn't know they were Canadian. Like, you know, finding out so many people were Canadian, you're like, what? Rich Little's Canadian? Did you know that?
I did know that. I did. Yeah. I had him on years ago.
Really?
Yeah, he's great. Sweet
Rich
guy.
Rich Little, I mean, we had
half of SNL, pretty much.
Oh, yeah? Well, yeah. SNL was created by a Canadian.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Now, I understand that George Carlin actually played a pretty big role in your early career. Is that right?
Yeah, well, I was a huge fan, and then I saw him one night, excuse me, in Toronto. It was like, must have been 92, the night the Blue Jays clinched the World Series, and everybody was like partying up and down Yonge Street in Toronto, and I was just a 22-year-old punk-ass kid. Just being a dick, walking around, screaming with everybody else. Woo, we won! I didn't even care about baseball. I was just bandwagoning. And I'm walking down the street, and I see this old guy with a ponytail walking towards me. And I elbow my friend and go, this guy looks like George Carlin. And I'm just being a dick. And he walks past me and go, how you doing, George? And he goes, how you doing, kid? And I was like, what?
That's awesome.
Wait, what? And I ran after him like, wait, what are you doing here? He goes, am I not supposed to be here? And I was like, oh, my God. And I completely... The whole punk-ass kid went out the window. I was like, hi, sir, how are you? And I walked him back to his hotel. I don't think he wanted me to.
Hey, you got to seize that moment.
Yeah, and I get to, you know, now thinking back when I was like, are you staying here at the Sutton place? No, I'm staying at a friend's place. And I was like, oh, okay. He probably was staying at the Sutton place, just didn't want me to bother him, you know?
Yeah.
Because he was a very, very nice man, very gracious.
I've heard that.
And, you know, I've done the same thing to people now. I'm like,
that's cool.
Gracious to them, but then they're like, are you staying here? No, I'm staying somewhere else. Because, you know, you don't want to have to be mean to somebody at some point.
Yeah, totally. But I hear that a lot. I hear of a lot of popular comedians now who, when they were very young, approached George Carlin in like a comedy club or wherever and would give him their notebook of jokes or ask advice. And he would actually go back to his hotel and take the time to give him some notes and advice, encourage them.
No, he was great.
Several people have said that.
Yeah, I told him, I said, hey, maybe, you know, maybe one day we'll work together. You never know, kid. Maybe we'll.
And you did, didn't you?
I did. I heard about you host 10 minutes before he died. 10 minutes. 10 months, sorry. 10 months before he passed away.
Wow. What was that like?
He was playing. He was getting ready to do another HBO special, and so he was doing some warm up sets. And he had just had a quadruple bypass.
Wow!
So the comedy Hermosa Beach, the Comedy Magic Club out there.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Because they knew how much
place.
I love Carlin. They were like, hey, Carlin's coming in this week, and he's working on his new stuff. And I go, oh my God!
Wow!
Who's hosting? They go, so and so. I go, damn it. You want to be on the show? I go, yeah, but can I want to host. no problem. We'll move them off when we let you host.
Oh, that's awesome.
So they let me host. And when I introduced him, my chin started quivering. And I thought I was going to cry while I was introducing him.
Shit.
That was a pretty good moment. And then he shakes my hand and goes, you're making me look bad, kid.
That's amazing.
He was awesome.
Yeah, he was a god. Wow. And Rickles, do you consider yourself sort of an insult comic, too? I know you do a lot of crowd work
for
big venues.
Yeah, that's I like to mess around with people, you know?
Yeah.
My goal is to make you see what you're saying is funny.
Mm-hmm.
It's never to hurt your feelings. And, you know, Rickles even told me that a long time ago. He's like, hey, kid, don't hurt feelings up there, all right? Then don't use F's and S's. S's? When did S's become a bad word?
Yeah. He's amazing.
He was amazing.
I saw him a couple of times. I saw him right before he died. And, you know, the guy was in a wheelchair and wasn't doing so hot. But he was doing these interview shows with Regis Philbin interviewing him and showing clips and stuff. But, like, when it came to Q&A, he still had it. And would, like, have zingers at the ready.
On YouTube, I go and watch old Rickles interviews.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like him on Carson in the 70s.
Oh, yeah.
Or him on Dick Cavett or something.
Yeah.
Like whatever I can find him on, I watch him. And he was just so funny.
Yeah. Oh, he was brilliant. I wonder how he would play now. Like, everyone seems so sensitive. But anyone who knew him knows that Rickles was the kindest, most open-minded, woke guy in the world.
I think people get it misunderstood. They mistake your words.
Yeah.
For who you are.
Yeah.
And you'll find the more people speak about certain things, the more they're not against these things. You know what I mean? Like, there's a reason they're speaking about them.
Yeah. I would just mention that you do these huge venues now. You're playing arenas all over the world. What is the biggest one that you've ever done? The biggest venue? How many people?
If it's just for my show, like 18,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's incredible. It takes a very special kind of skill and a hell of a lot of balls to play a venue like that, I have to think. I mean, what's the secret to translating such an intimate art form to a crowd of like 18,000 people?
Well, for me, I came up in the clubs.
Mm-hmm.
So I always want to try to create a club type atmosphere.
Yeah.
I'm doing these big venues not because I'm like, I must do these big venues. It was out of necessity, out of demand. That's why I was doing them. That's what I was doing. But I also wanted, you know, I wanted people to feel like they were part of the show, like they were there. Mm-hmm. I don't want you sitting in the back going, eh.
Yeah.
I was in the back. I don't know.
Yeah.
I want you to be in the back going, I had the same experience as the guy in the front.
Yeah.
So what I do is I have cameramen on stage with me.
Okay.
And if I talk to you in the audience, you are now on the screen.
Okay. So the audience in the back row is clued in.
Yeah. For me, it's all about inclusion. You want to make it inclusive and cohesive. So I want you in the back to be able to see the guy I'm talking to, and I will repeat his answers because you already know what I look like. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, that's hard to do. There are very few people who do what you do at this point.
Well, no, there's not. Now there's a ton of them. I mean,
really? That big? Like arenas?
Sebastian Maniscalco's killing it.
Yeah.
Joe Rogan's out there doing these arenas.
Is he doing arenas?
Oh, my God. Yeah.
No kidding.
Two nights in a row. You know.
I mean, do you ever.
These guys do it very differently than I do. Like,
really?
A lot of them do it in the round. I don't like it in the round.
Oh, no? Why not?
I don't like people behind me.
Yeah, that's kind of a creepy feeling.
You know what I mean? Like, I feel like I'm ignoring you. Like, oh, hey, I'm sorry. What did you. You know, and I like to talk to the crowd. I can't talk to the crowd if they're behind me.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Do you ever go out there and there are just nights when it's just not happening just because it's such a big venue and there's so many people and like you never have that. Well, I guess they're paying to see you. So
no, they're already there to see
anymore.
You know,
mm-hmm.
And that's half the battle mentally.
Yeah.
You have those nights when sometimes in clubs.
Yeah. Do you still do clubs now?
Absolutely. I just did 18 shows in Florida.
Okay.
Over the past 18 days, matter of fact. And all clubs, Miami Improv, West Palm Beach Improv, Orlando Improv, Tampa Improv.
We're going to take a quick break, and then I'll be back with more when we come back in just a minute. Folks, I've been a small business owner for years, and if you're like me, you know there's a certain paradox to working for yourself. The more money you make, the more of a drag it can be, thanks to all the paperwork that comes with it. chasing down clients to get what you're owed, then making payments to employees and vendors, and finally having to account for every dollar that goes in and out. It's exhausting, and worse, it eats into your quality of life. That's why I'm a big fan of Wave. Wave helps freelancers, consultants, and small business owners make, move, and manage your money, bringing you closer to financial success with accounting, invoicing, payments, and payroll services that are easy to use, secure, and free. As an entrepreneur, you understand the struggle and headache associated with managing your finances. With Wave's free accounting and invoicing services, the daily burden of organizing your finances will be a thing of the past, so you can spend more time doing the things you love. Have employees? Not to worry. Wave's payroll services has you covered, so you can pay them on time and with ease. It's time to ditch the spreadsheets, shoeboxes filled with receipts, and the overall stress of managing your finances so you can start growing your business and get back to doing what matters. Find out why millions of photographers, graphic designers, consultants, contractors, and small business owners are using Wave to grow their business. Set your business up for financial success by signing up for your free account today at waveapps.com/kick. That's waveapps.com/kick. Let me ask you something I love to ask comedians. What's the worst gig you ever had?
I don't know. You got so many of those.
Yeah.
That you can't actually pick one.
Yeah.
I mean, you could look at it as it was the worst gig, but you can also look at it as it was a great learning experience.
Yeah.
I mean,
sure,
there's the worst gigs because you were off, and then there's the worst gigs because the audience was trash.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to decide, but
yeah,
you know, you just have those nights. You'll have nights where you get off, and you're like, what the hell was that?
Yeah.
And you're like, it was kind of me, it was kind of them.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, yeah, they were shitty, but I could have probably been better.
Yeah.
But they probably still would have been shitty. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I've had Gilbert Gottfried on a few times, and he always says that his dream is that he gets a gig and he shows up there and then they say, oh, the club burned down or it got flooded and we have to cancel, but here's your check. Do you ever have nights like that?
I mean, that's like any job, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think that's goes right back to school. Mm-hmm. When you're in school, you're like hoping, did school burn down or was there a snow day? Are you from, where are you from?
Oh, no, I'm from Texas.
Oh, so you don't know what a snow day is.
We never got a snow day, never got an earthquake day. I don't even think we got a hurricane day.
Tornado.
Like, I always had to go to
what
school.
What part of Texas?
Outside of Houston, Southwest Houston.
I like Texas a lot.
Do you really?
I actually, when I moved to America, I'd actually consider moving to Houston.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Why is that?
I don't know. I just liked it. I liked the weather. I liked the vibe. I like that it's in the center of the country. I loved Whataburger.
Whataburger, yeah. But that is so annoying. They chop up the onions and the lettuce, and then it gets all over the place.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't. Yeah, you got to get it without that.
You got to get without all the
garbage. Yeah, I don't like lettuce. I don't like onions on anything.
Oh, really?
I got acid reflux, so it triggers it. And then also it gives you terrible breath. I don't want to talk to people with onion breath.
Well, I have to ask then, how do you handle Indian food? Very well?
Yeah, I love Indian food, but I can't do it very often.
Oh, really? I mean, it's so oily, and I love Indian too, but it's so oily, it's so spicy.
You got to know what to order and how to order it.
It's not made for that. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. What's your go-to dish?
When I go to a restaurant, I order a biryani.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. So you either get a chicken biryani or a vegetable biryani.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get a side order of chicken tikka masala.
Oh, I love that.
Here's the trick.
Yeah.
You take the chicken tikka masala and you pour it all over your biryani.
Huh.
Pour the gravy of it all over your biryani.
Nice.
Even the chicken, throw the meat in, whatever you want to do. And you mix it. Oh, my God. Yeah. It's going to ruin your life.
I love biryani. Do you do it with lamb or chicken or what?
I'll either go chicken or vegetable.
Oh, yeah.
I don't like lamb. I don't like lamb and goat and all the weird animals.
Oh, yeah. Goats got too many bones.
Yeah, yeah. They're very bony animals.
Yeah.
If you could find a beef one, that'd be amazing.
Do they do beef?
My family does, but
oh, really?
You know, but go to a restaurant, good luck, or a pork one, good luck. You know what I mean?
Now, you say in the special that I guess your parents didn't really expose you to your Indian culture growing up.
Right.
Why was that?
It's the type of Indian that we are. We're called Anglo Indians.
Okay.
And Anglo Indians don't exactly have a place in India. Huh. We could be from anywhere in India. There's no region where Anglo Indians are from.
Okay.
Whereas most Indians are regional. We are from there.
Okay.
Anglo Indians can literally be from anywhere in India, and we're products of the British being there.
Okay, like literal ethnicity.
Yeah.
Okay,
we're
and everything.
Mixed, British and Indian.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And the mixing started in the early 1800s.
Uh-huh.
And Anglo-Indians ended up starting their own culture because we weren't accepted by the Indians.
Yeah.
And we were sort of working for and with the British.
Okay.
So Anglo-Indians' first language is always English.
Uh-huh.
Their customs are a hybrid between English and Indian.
Okay.
So, like, we have Indian dishes that are not strictly Anglo-Indian, but very, if you meet a real Anglo-Indian person, they'll know. He'd be like, what do you eat on Sunday? That's like, oh, you're Anglo-Indian? What do you have on Sunday? And it'd be like, ball curry and yellow rice. I'm like, you're Anglo-Indian. What happens at 4 o'clock every day? Tea time. Oh my God.
Oh, no kidding.
Oh, yeah. Every day it was growing up, it was tea time at 4 o'clock every day.
Curry shepherd's pie or something like that?
Almost, pretty much. And we would eat shepherd's pie, though.
Oh, yeah.
That's amazing. And, like, and we were also, like, historically, like, the entertainers and artists and
really
because we weren't known for being hardworking, you know what I mean? We weren't like the studious types that were gonna go be doctors and lawyers and stuff like that. So I'll give you some famous Anglo-Indians who you didn't know were Anglo-Indian.
Okay.
Engelbert Humperdinck.
Really?
Yeah. His real name's Arnold Dorsey. Cliff Richard.
Okay.
Remember Cliff Richard?
Refresh
Isn't
my memory.
It funny.
Yeah.
How we don't talk
anymore. Okay.
That's Cliff Richard. Myrna Loy, the actress.
Myrna Loy. Wow, that's
Anglo-Indian.
That's a big callback far back. Huh.
Russell Peters.
Russell Peters. Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah, I was wondering with the name. Okay, that explains it then.
And then you got guys like Ben Kingsley. So to be Anglo-Indian, your father, the father must be British and the mother must be Indian. Then the offspring is Anglo-Indian.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Ben Kingsley's father is Indian and his mother's British.
Interesting.
And so he's a Eurasian. Because the father's side kind of dictates what the culture is going to be.
Yeah.
And so Ben Kingsley's real name is Krishna. I don't know.
Really?
So I did him. I was in the movie Jungle Book.
You were what?
In the Jungle Book.
Yeah.
The remake that John
Favreau. Yeah, that was great.
So I met Ben Kingsley at the premiere and I.
Yeah. Did he make you call him sir? I hear that he's one of those guys who's really big on that.
I called him sir, but only out of respect, not because he's been knighted.
Yeah.
I was like, sir, I winked at him. I go, Krishna, and he smiled. And I go. So, did you know? And I told him the explanation between the difference between an Anglo-Indian and a Eurasian. And he stood there and he looked at me and he goes, "Huh? You never stop learning." Didn't know that.
That's funny.
I was like, "Wow, that's so cool."
Yeah, I've heard that he's really big into his knighthood to the point that he corrects people. Now, most of the people that I've met, like Richard Branson and I don't know Michael Caine. They're totally casual about it. Yeah, Michael Caine.
Yeah, I'm Michael Caine.
My name is Michael Caine. Do you do a lot of impressions?
I do sometimes. But you know, the thing is I do impressions of like nobody famous.
Oh, yeah.
Here's my neighbor. You know what I mean?
Have you ever gotten an offer from Bollywood? Would you ever do something like that?
No, I don't think that's my world.
Yeah.
That's not my reality. It's not my world.
Can't sing and dance.
Can't sing and dance. Don't want to sing and dance. There's billions of people who love that and would kill to be in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, don't waste it on a guy who doesn't respect it or care about it.
Yeah.
Waste it on do give it to somebody who's it's gonna mean something to.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder, did your parents ever encourage you to marry an Indian girl or maybe even arranged marriage?
No, that's thing. The Anglo-Indian things. That's not our thing.
Oh, right.
That's not our deal.
Okay.
Matter of fact, I grew up with black guys from about the age of 4 years old. That's all I hung around with black people. So
in Canada?
They
have black people in Canada?
In Toronto we do.
Really?
Jamaicans, Trinidadians, a bunch of Caribbean people.
Huh.
So I hung around them because they didn't bully me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I hung around them.
Oh, that's interesting.
So the first few girls I ended up dating were all black girls.
Oh, yeah?
My parents were panicking. They were like, but what about a white girl? And I'm like, nah, they don't even look at me, Dad. Why would I talk to a white girl?
You know? So they're more into the Anglo side than the Indian side.
Well, yeah, it seems like they were. And then when I started dating Indian girls, and here's the thing, I was engaged to an Indian girl once.
Oh, yeah?
And this is when I really discovered how different the two cultures were. Like, yes, I'm Indian. No, I'm not.
Huh.
And she was a Punjabi Indian girl.
Uh-huh.
We had the engagement party. And my family came and her family came at this party. And they put on music for my family first.
Oh, yeah.
Which
was the playlist
like,
there?
Like rock and roll. Like,
yeah.
Like, you know, rock and roll all night. And I mean, like, you know, Stones, Bill Haley and Bill Haley and the Comets. And then Glenn Miller and all that kind of stuff. Like big band. And like that's the stuff that I grew up listening to, the Platters and all that. And then my side of the family gets up and they're dancing. They're like they're jiving and they're ballroom dancing. And like my family was big on dancing growing up.
Yeah.
So my parents were really good dancers, like jive and foxtrot and all that stuff. That was their thing.
No kidding.
So they're playing all this and my side of the family's having a grand old time dancing. And I look and all her family's sitting down watching us like, what the fuck is wrong with these people?
Yeah, Indians, they know how to dance.
So then my family's like, what's wrong with them? And then they put on Indian music.
Yeah.
And all of her side of the family got up and was having the blast of their life. And then my side of the family was sitting down watching them going, what the fuck is wrong with them? And I realized, oh, my God, we're Indian and we're brown.
Yeah.
But culturally, we don't connect like this.
Wow. Huh.
So it was a trippy thing. And, you know, obviously we never ended up getting married, not because of that. But it was kind of one of the moments where I was like, oh, this isn't going to work because that stuff doesn't ring true to me at all.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Indian weddings are wild. My brother actually married an Indian American girl. Her parents were from not from Sugarland, from New York.
Oh wow!
But her parents were from India, and she grew up here, but very much into her Indian heritage. And I mean, that wedding was like Game of Thrones. There's like
3 days long,
tattoos
right?
and horses and a big pyre of fire. People throwing rose petals into it.
Yeah, it's too much.
Yeah, that was something
else.
When
I did eventually get married one time in my life for 14 months, I got married in Vegas with an Elvis impersonator.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Nice. I spent $500 on this wedding.
Yeah, and I have to say, one thing that I learned very quickly is that Indians do not at all believe in the concept of immediate family.
After
the wedding, I was suddenly getting calls from like cousin Ravi Mama and all these people I don't remember. They're like, hey, I'm in town. Let's go out.
Oh, yeah, yeah. If you give them your number and they don't play the L.A. game of just call me and I'll be busy.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
They're like, but we are related now. You're like, no, not really. Oh, well, you're one of those, are you?
Yeah.
You gotta,
I can't say no.
You got to keep it real.
Yeah, literally my little like white Texas family quintupled in a weekend.
Oh, yeah. How would your parents feel about all that?
They're cool.
Yeah.
They're cool.
Feel about it?
They're, you know, it's interesting.
I'm sure there was a resistance.
You know, not that I'm aware of and probably not that anyone knows. They're very cool, very open-minded and all that. And, parents were cool with it. But
were they an upwardly mobile Indian family?
What do you mean by that?
Upper middle class kind of?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yes. I mean, she went to Harvard.
So. Oh, yeah, my family's very working, blue-collar working class.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I've always related better to white trash almost. You know what I mean? Like, when I go by, like, a redneck town, although I know they're not looking for me, I understand them. I'm like, I know your mindset.
Yeah.
Because I grew up financially similar to you.
Interesting.
With that same bleak hope. There was no hope. There was no glimmer of hope. There was no future.
Huh.
And had I not gotten lucky with what I do now, I would possibly be like you.
Yeah. So I guess you can kind of relate to what's going on out there in middle America these days, huh?
Yeah. I don't relate to it. I understand it, but I don't understand their fascination with the guy who's promising them the golden carrot that's not giving them the golden carrot.
Right.
Like, how are you not understanding this bait and switch that's happening in front of you?
Yeah. That's the thing that drives me crazy because I'm like, if someone played me for a fool and I realized it, I would be furious. I'd be pissed off at that guy. I wouldn't be just buying in for more.
You would be. But
you think so?
But, okay, let's take that, right?
Yeah.
Now look at it this way. You'd be furious that you got played for a fool, but now I'm the guy standing in front of you going, ha, didn't I tell you so? Now you're mad because you want to spite me.
Right, right.
So rather than concede defeat, you would rather wallow in loss.
Yeah, yeah. What do they call it? The Dunning-Kruger effect, where if you're confronted with facts that go against your beliefs, you actually dig your heels in more.
Yeah. So I'm an atheist, so I get it.
Are you really?
Yeah, so when I talk to religious people, I'm like, I'm not going to convince you.
Have you always been an atheist? How did you come to that?
No, you're born an atheist.
Okay,
and then somebody teaches you to follow these guidelines according to the book that they like.
Yeah.
Whatever... whatever book it is that they've decided is the answer to their problems. And then they brainwash you into believing it.
Yeah.
And then you don't question it. But I've always been a guy that questioned everything since I was a child.
Yeah. That really annoys those people.
Oh, yeah.
Were
and then I was
religious?
Even as a kid, I was like, but why can't I ask questions?
Mm-hmm.
But I just have questions. And and I think that's also where we're at with this next generation. They want us to just accept a lot of things that they're saying. And I'm not opposed to accepting these things, but I have questions.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't I ask a question? You know what I mean? You want to be non-binary? That's fine. I have a question. And the reason I have a question is because I want to understand you.
Mm-hmm.
And the more we understand each other, the more we understand each other. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and the more, the easier life becomes because you don't have these lingering questions and you don't have this way of looking at them weird because you have a question in your head and your eyes are looking at them. But they could see that there's a question mark in your eyes.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I respect Judaism. I'm not Jewish, but I respect Judaism because they kind of encourage that. They encourage debate and asking of questions. There's a whole kind of history and lineage of that sort of thing.
It doesn't make it real. It just makes it just makes it more accessible. It's not any more real than the others.
Yeah, that's true. You actually do a bit in your show where you talk about how you kind of understand how white people have their grievances and are scared out of their minds because they see what's happening. I mean, there is the browning of America going on, and you can't stop that.
Yeah.
You know, that's reality. But some people just don't want to face that reality.
Yeah, it's a weird time we're living in, you know, and I definitely do feel bad for white people because, you know, because I see it in the comments when people say things too.
Yeah.
And it's not like on my page, it's like Amazon will post an ad and then I'll see the comments and I'm like, that's what you think without even watching me, huh? That's what you think already?
Yeah.
Like, oh, great, another non-white guy talking about how bad white people are. I'm like, actually, I'm not, so maybe you should watch the special.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
It's not – I like to be the book where you look at the – I know what this book's about. You go, no, open it up. It's different.
Yeah. Definitely.
It's a pop-up book.
Yeah. By the way, before we wrap up here, I want to congratulate you on your son. I guess, did you have him before or after the special?
He's 9 months old now.
Okay.
He was 2 months old when I shot the special.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's 2 months old now. He's 9 months.
You were doing that special on that little sleep?
Well, you know, I left. I was on tour.
It's a good strategy.
I was on tour. I left him behind, you know. I mean, when I'm working, I'm working.
Yeah.
Daddy's got to pay the bills.
Yeah. Yeah. My wife and I are actually expecting our first in, I think, 3 weeks right now.
Wow.
And all anyone says is, forget about sleep. You'll never sleep again. Say goodbye to sleep. No, it's kind of getting annoying at this point.
Can I give you the real now?
Yeah.
What are you having?
A girl.
Do you have a name for her?
Charlotte.
That's a great name.
Yeah, it was my wife.
What made her name her Charlotte? Is she a big fan of North
Carolina?
I don't know.
She just really liked the name.
And
apparently, it's like the number 9 most popular name in America
right now.
So I was kind of pushed back on that.
It's making a comeback.
Yeah. I have old references. I was thinking of like Sex and the City. I'm like, people are going to think you named her after Charlotte from Sex and the City.
That's where you went with it, huh?
Yeah.
You're very hetero.
I guess so.
Here's what's going to happen. You don't notice. Listen, the kid's not keeping you up because the kid's being a dick.
Right, of course.
Do you know what I mean? And it's a baby. People are like, when I had my daughter's 9 now, but when I had my daughter, oh, you're going to change a diaper? I'd love to see you change a diaper. I go,
oh, yeah, I've got that.
Yeah, I'm going to change a diaper. The kid's not shitting itself because it's being an asshole. It's a kid. It doesn't know anybody. It's just
Ruining my life?
Yeah, it's a human being a human, you know? So and none of these bad things that they're warning you about are even they're not even worthwhile to pay attention to.
Okay. Good
like, yeah, oh, yeah, you may get a night or two where you have some messed up sleep, but that's not going to be a consistent thing.
Yeah.
It's just not. You're going to work out a system with your wife.
Yeah.
You're going to be, listen, babe, I need to wake up early tomorrow. I need you to on duty with baby tonight.
Yeah.
And if, you know, you're tired, I'll take the slack. You're in a relationship.
Right.
You figure these things out. You know?
Yeah. And when I think of all the times that I lost sleep for really stupid reasons, just because I was getting messed up drinking and partying and hanging out with people. I'm like, okay, priorities here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not that bad.
Okay.
Yeah. Let me just ease your mind. It's really not that bad.
Thank you, Russell.
It's actually, and you're not going to fall in love right away. It's just not going to happen.
That's interesting.
Maybe. I didn't.
That I haven't heard before.
I didn't. Not on either child.
What was the moment?
My daughter was different because she was 2.5 months early.
Mm-hmm.
So she was a preemie, so I couldn't even connect with her right away because she was literally the size of my hand,
mm-hmm.
and she was in an incubator.
Mm-hmm.
So the best I could do is put my finger in and like touch her very,
yeah.
And I was very scared to touch her because her skin looked so raw and new. I didn't want to I didn't know how much salt was in my finger. I didn't want to hurt the kid. You know? And then eventually you start caring for the kid, but my son took me a long time.
Really?
It took me about 6 months to get really get going with him.
Yeah, see, I worry that I may not connect until they can be a smart ass back to me. When I see he has a sense of humor, that's when we're going to be pals.
My daughter has a great sense of humor, but she won't show it to everybody. If you met her, you'd think she's really quiet and shy. Yeah. And she is, but she's got a really sharp, she knows what and when to say things. It'll be like, and just like, ding, like, wow, you're really, and but it's not like she's like this obnoxious kid. She's just like, she's aware, and she's like, yeah, there's something I could say right now.
That's awesome. Well, Russell's hour-long stand-up special is called Russell Peters Deported. It's now available on Amazon Prime, and you can visit russellpeters.com for his upcoming tour dates. Russell, thanks for talking with me.
I'm actually very excited for your upcoming baby.
I am, too.
Well, congratulations. I'm not pulling out.
Yeah.
Thanks. That's great.
Thanks one more time to Russell Peters for coming on the show. Russell Peters Deported is now streaming on Amazon Prime. Again, keep up with Russell at russellpeters.com or on Twitter at TheRealRussellP. If you enjoyed today's podcast, be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and rate and review us while you're there. 5-star ratings and detailed reviews are one of the best ways for new listeners to discover the show. You can also follow us on Facebook or on Twitter at @KickAssNewsPod and recommend us to your friends on your social media. For more fun stuff, visit kickassnews.com, and I welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions at comments@kickassnews.com. For now, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass News.